Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
Hello, welcome back. This is Golf is Ruining My Life. Once more, we gather around. That's the sigh there.
Are you golf sad?
A bit golf sad after Saturday.
So to catch people up.
Saturday, yeah.
If you've not watched the last episode of Golf is Ruining My Life, you, just before it finished, was like, I've got my first scratch tournament of the year coming. Yeah. And we said, next time we chat, it will have happened.
This is that next time, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is the post-match interview. You are the gathered hordes of press asking the manager where I think it went wrong and what I could improve next time.
I'm golf's Gary Lineker.
You are golf's Gary Lineker.
Without the money.
Yeah, and I am, in this instance, I'd say golf's Ian Poulter.
Okay. Just had a shoey from Fisher in Live Adelaide.
Yeah. So it was a nice day, good round.
So to put some context into this, you're playing a scratch tournament against anyone could enter.
So this is the captain's qualifier. It's the first big summer tournament. And actually, anyone could enter. And this one isn't scratch. I got that wrong. There's another tournament in a couple of weeks that is fully scratch, right? This one is handicaps and everyone enters. The top 34 go off to play match play against each other. The bottom 34 go off and play match play against each other. And there's a cup. There's like the Tigers Cup for the top league. Do you know what I mean? So that Saturday is the, are you going to be in the Premier League or the Championship? That's where that is, right?
And you're paired against anyone in the club.
You're not playing against anyone on that in that day. You're just doing a score that day.
Oh, it's just a scratch. That's just a,
it's just a score.
A score that you put down, but handicaps are included.
But handicaps are included. And it's around net 78 qualifies for the top tier. And anything less than that, you go into the bottom tier, roughly.
Okay.
It's a nice format. But crucially...
So if you played to your handicap or even a bit worse,
yeah,
you'll be in, you'll be fine.
Yeah. The problem was I didn't play a bit worse. I played quite a lot worse than my handicap. So we need to talk about medal golf, right?
Yeah. Proper, oh God, yeah.
Proper. The day when everyone's there and you know everyone's scoring and every putt counts and the pressure is on and the gremlins arrive. They usually move in around here and it doesn't matter how good you've been playing before... It all goes out the window. There's something about medal golf that turns us all into chimps waving sticks at each other's faces.
But isn't it almost because we don't play anywhere near medal golf conditions normally when we play golf?
Yeah.
That's the problem when you think about it, is medal golf is so hard because it's pure stroke play.
Yeah.
Every shot counts. There's no, oh, that's a bad lie. Give yourself something a bit better.
That was a huge thing for me. I had a lot of really bare lies because this time of year, it's starting to look nice, but you still got those patches of mud.
Yeah.
And you can't. And in the rough, like you can still get really nasty winter rough, but obviously no Aberdeen rules here.
Yeah.
Everyone knows the best thing about Aberdeen is Aberdeen rules, right?
I love Aberdeen rules. I've played some of my best golf with Aberdeen rules.
I love Aberdeen. Rules. And there's none of that, right? And suddenly, and then you've got chips just off the green on those bare muddy lies. My chipping, I went early. I practiced my chipping for 45 minutes. I went through every chip in the book. I had it all ready to go.
Yeah.
I had a lovely way of playing it. I was cutting down on the ball. I felt confident. And I calculated how many shots I lost because of bad chipping. This isn't three putting. There's a bit of that as well. This is just bad chipping. How many shots do you think I lost over the day?
How are you calculating shots lost? What do you mean by
that? If I had got up and down from all of those situations, it would be zero. But I'm not stupid. Obviously, you're not going to get up and down from all those situations.
But I see your point. Okay, so the idea is up and down from here is zero. How many shots did you lose because of just poor chipping?
Yeah.
Six?
Ten.
Oh.
14 over I shot, 14 over, and I three putted a couple of times. Shot, I had like three birdies. Like when I was on it, my golf was so good, and then I'd arrive at the green and become a different human being. And that was purely, that wasn't technique, it was medal. What is it about medal golf that does this to us? Now I've got a bit of a theory, a bit of a sort of solution pathway that I've come up with.
Okay.
Do you fancy it?
Yes.
Do you want to hear the solution pathway?
Yes.
It's a control thing. The more stressed you are in golf, I find, the more you're trying to control it. The harder you grip to it, the harder you grip to your swing, the harder you try and shake the ball and push it in certain directions. And when you're chipping, that gets even worse. When you just try and force it to do the thing, right? You lose all your touch and you lose all sense of, golf's just a bit random ultimately. You're going to hit this thing and have a go. See what happens. You lose that. When you're playing with a mate, yeah, I'm just going to have a go at hitting this. I'm going to swing through it and go for it. But you are much more flowing. Whereas with these high-pressure situations, I find I'm like, and it's that desperate control. And as soon as I came off the gas a bit with that, things really improved.
That's the skill, I think, for medal golf, though, is it's still thinking through every shot.
Yeah,
it's still going, okay, what do I actually want to do with this? It's not turning up to the ball and just hitting it. It's thinking about every shot, but allowing it not to matter. That's the skill, but that's impossible. That's so, because it does matter. You've not played medal conditions for weeks. You've not played off. Well, you've given yourself preferred lies at times. I mean, I know I do. If I'm playing it with mates and I get an awful lie, yeah, I'm going to not play it out of that lie. And you don't realize until you get to a medal, the effect that has on your score. It's huge.
I would say preferred lies should include the rough. That is a rule change I would make.
I've had that in winter. I've played that in winter.
Played that on a course. And I think preferred lies should include the rough because it's so punishing. It's so ridiculous. And I get it now. It's spring. That's the other thing as well. It's like we've gone from playing pitch and putt golf to grown up golf, right? We're off the back tees.
Yeah, yeah.
Those have just been opened. The white tees have just arrived.
Oh, but can we just for a minute appreciate how nice that is?
Gorgeous.
When did you leave mats?
We left mats a while ago, but we've been on yellows for a while.
Yes, and nice. We got the whites out.
We've got the whites. So we're right at the back. And holes just look better further back, right?
Mm.
You really see it. It's taking a step back and seeing the shape of it all. It's gorgeous. But you're suddenly going from hitting 9 irons off the mats to maybe a 6 iron off the backs. And it's windy. And the greens are really, really rapid where we are at the moment. The greens are in incredibly good nick at Muswell Hill right now. They've done a lot of work in the last couple of years with a new consultant who sorted them out. And Kyle and his team do a brilliant job. The greens are amazing at Muswell Hill. And everything rolls out. So in springtime, suddenly you're hitting these putts that it's getting towards the hole and you start to go, yeah, nice putt, Tom. Why is the ball still going?
Yeah, I don't know.
Somehow it's still going. Why is it still? And suddenly what should be a foot behind or beyond the hole is 6-7 foot. So I three putted three or four times as well.
And this is the issue that you have with golf is we put in these little rule changes throughout the year, whether it's preferred lies or don't hit it out of that or give yourself a bit of a better chance here. Yeah. And you begin to kid yourself that you're a better golfer than you really are.
Yeah.
And that's
give myself that 3 footer. Well, actually, if you do that over 18 holes, there's a good chance you're going to miss a couple of those.
100. I would miss 3 of those through 18 holes.
Yeah.
I would miss 3 2 or 3 footers. I've done it. I've done competitions. Lads golf holidays in Portugal. I remember my trip to Portugal, second hole, 2 footer, missed it. There is no way if we were playing with mates, they would have made me put that in. They'd have gone, that's given.
Yeah.
Over 18 holes, it's 2.
Yeah.
It's 3. You give yourself a bit of a better, you move a twig, but maybe too much.
Yeah.
That's a shot. It's all this sort of stuff that when you play the medal, you don't do and it kills you.
Should I also say the best thing about a medal round that you can do is blow up at the beginning?
So you don't care anymore.
Just get a 7 or an 8. Because actually, if you are a single figure handicapper and you get a 7 or an 8, you can go on a par run after that. It's unbelievable how much difference that makes. Obviously, it's infuriating. You've gone all that way. You've given away all this time to go and play this thing and everyone's there and you've done it, right? 7 or 8 is a nightmare. But there is something about it where it's just gone and you just get on with it. But you still care. That's the thing. Because I've tried that as an approach with golf before.
With not caring.
Yeah,
but it doesn't work.
Why does it? It doesn't work.
It's you have to find the beautiful middle ground.
Yes.
Thinking through the shots, really considering what it is that you're doing, but not caring enough to go insane when it goes wrong. Yeah. It's why I always play so much better when I get to 14, 15. And partly is because you've already done 14 holes before you. But I think it's more than that. Mm. I think I play better when I get to 14, almost because the anxiety of the round is gone. Mm. The anxiety of, God, this could go really wrong today. By the time you get to 14, you've about muddled through. You've found your swing. You know how to hit it a little bit. And it all comes together.
Yeah. If you were to take an average of every single round of golf I've ever played, at every course I've ever played, right, where obviously every hole is completely different, all those courses, I think you'd find I tend to score best on around 16 and 17.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah, totally.
That is a thing, right?
But I wouldn't suggest if you played 14 holes, and if you play 14 holes the morning before a medal and then teed off, so you've already got those 14 holes warm up in, I don't think you'd hack the system and then play amazing one, because it's more than that.
It's mental.
It's the mental game of, the best way I can describe it is having the anxiety of the round gone.
But still wanting to do well, still trying your hardest. So, you know, and that's the key. If you don't care, then you stop really wanting to do well and you stop trying and it all just spirals out of control then. You've got to still be in it. You've still got to be trying to build a card. And I think that, you know, it's great that everyone does match play and Stableford's massive, obviously. Stableford is the go-to. But I think that that is a bit of a shame that Stableford is our default for events and stuff. And I get why it is, but I think...
Because it's more fun.
Because it's more fun and fun is important. Sure, fun's a good thing. But I think that more medal events would be helpful to try and play golf at its hardest and its purest and its most enraging. And that isn't just a thing for low... I think that's for all handicaps. Properly putting in a card.
Yeah.
Because the number of times you do that and people who are off 28 go, I just shot 45 over. And you're like, yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
Because you put it out, mate.
Yeah. But I had this playing proper golf. We used to do this at Muswell Hill on a Wednesday, the Wednesday roll up.
Yeah.
And the problem with proper golf is it takes forever.
Okay.
Oh,
nothing.
It takes forever.
Drives me mad more than this.
Stroke play, medal golf. It drives you mad.
Reading the putt.
But also, I'm a culprit of it.
Yeah.
I'm doing it as well. We're all doing it. That's the problem. All four of you are doing it. You're reading every single putt. You're taking your time over everything. I remember doing a 9-hole competition on a Wednesday and it took 2.5 hours to get round.
For 9 holes?
For 9 holes. And I remember Em texting me and being like, what is going on? I was like, I know.
And you're stuck.
Which it just, everything takes forever.
Yeah.
Because everyone's putting out.
You can't play well.
You get to a 3-footer. Everyone's marking them. And letting it's just.
And fair enough, because you're doing it as well. Also, on that proper medal rounds, someone needs to change the rule about drives and hitting provisionals, okay? Someone needs to change that rule because on a proper medal now, obviously, or a proper round, you hit a drive and for whatever reason, you think it's up there in the rough and you haven't hit a provisional, you get down there and you can't find it, you have to go back and hit another ball.
Yes.
Unless you've got a buggy, that is the most monumental waste of time and effort. That rule needs to change. I'm sure it used to be that you could just drop down or around there. I'm sure it used to be the nearest point where it went in. And of course, there might be some advantage there. You might be able to gain that if you really want to. But practically speaking, the time waste of going all the way back to the tee, especially when you hit it 350 yards.
Legends.
It's just so stupid.
It's the worst. There's nothing worse than not being able to find your ball and then having to schlep all the way back to the tee.
Where people are waiting on tee.
And it's medals, so everyone's taking it serious.
Yeah.
So here we go. The rules in golf that you would change. Because I've got one.
Good.
I've got one in my mind that I've thought for ages and doing some research before today. I was like, there's one, obviously, which is yours, which is just drop one. It's fine.
Just drop one down there.
I don't think it's fair that if you find your ball in a divot on the fairway, you're forced to play from the divot. Yeah. I don't think that's fair. I don't think it's logical and I don't think it makes sense. I think that would be a really easy change. Mm. You've put it in the middle of the fairway, you've done your bit.
Yeah.
The fact that the course isn't maintained well enough.
Yeah.
You've now got to hit it out of a divot.
Do you remember Casey a couple of years ago?
No, I don't.
Oh my God. Casey was in the middle of the fairway on something like the 17th or 18th at the end of a big PGA tournament. And he landed in a divoty hole thing that he had to play out. And that was it. Dropped a shot, lost the tournament. Like, it's completely wrong. It's completely wrong. The only problem with that is that people can then... You can game that, you can manipulate that, right? You can say, well, that's a divot. Is it a divot mark? Yeah, it is a divot mark. You can say, you know what I mean? You can start saying, I'm not happy with this lie. It's a divot mark. Well, I don't think it is. Well, I think it is. So it's too vague.
Yeah, it is vague. I understand that's the rationale of not doing it, but there's a lot of vagaries with golf, isn't there? Because there's the, if you buy a tree root and you claim it's like an animal burrow or something, there's been times where you've got relief because, oh, is it a tree root? Is it not? Oh, should you? There's a degree to anything.
You said it's a bit common sense, Tom. A bit common sense.
Bit of common sense, also, guys.
At our level, that's the thing. Like, we do this thing. It's a bit like we've talked about before when people go off the back tees when they're not good enough. At our level, if you're playing normal handicap club golf, the provisionals thing is stupid because it doesn't matter. Obviously, if you're qualifying for the Open,
it's different.
It's different. Of course. But if you're just playing a club golf on the weekend, the time, like, so this is the other thing I've noticed when there's a big day at the golf course, right? Is there's one thing you hear around the course is four. On a Saturday, because everyone's doing this big thing and it's gone straight to everyone's tiny minds, and you hear so many more shouts of four.
Yeah.
Because it's getting to everyone, which obviously I love. But it's an interesting, you know, signifier of what this pressure is doing. People shouting all over the course because they're not you. They're spraying it around the place because the pressure, it really affects the game.
But this goes back to my point that I've made for the last 6 months on this show, is that's one of the really infuriating things about this sport is it's really hard to truly practice for the big day.
Yeah.
Because you can't get it right. Yeah. Sorry to mention running again.
He's back onto running.
All my running on the lead up to the London Marathon, there was no truer test than that. I knew what I was capable of because I've done it.
Yeah.
You can turn up on medal day, know what you're capable of because you did it in practice, and just fall apart on the day because your medal conditions aren't right, your brain's not there. It's such a hard sport.
It's so hard, and I love that we gather to bitch about it. Adverts, would you like some?
I think I'm going to get destroyed with the club I'm going to put in my golf bag.
Oh, that's interesting. Have you got it? Have you bought it yet?
I've not bought it. I've already been on eBay to try and find one. Here's a little tease.
Golf destroyed or your mates are going to rib you?
I'm going to get ribbed.
Oh, great. Okay, good.
I'm going to get utterly ribbed for the golf club that... Let me just set the scene, actually.
Okay. All right, good.
I was at... I think it's called N1 Golf now.
Yeah.
It used to be known, and you'll know it as, North Greenwich Driving Range.
Yes.
Very famous. It's the one that's basically in the City of London. Mm-hmm. If you ever see anyone driving golf balls into what looks like the City of London, they're at this North Greenwich driving range. Yep. And I went there on a stag do on Saturday night. And I fell in love with something.
Mate, you didn't drink and drive, did you? That is a classic. That's a classic golf mistake. Never do that.
This guy!
Find out what mistake Tom made after these messages from our sponsors. Hello, welcome back to Golf Is Ruining My Life. So Tom has been out, he's had the beer goggles on while he's hitting golf clubs, right?
Yeah.
And so are these just generic supplied clubs? Because they used to do like TaylorMade and Stealths and stuff there.
Yeah.
Their thing.
There's nothing that good. Okay. They weren't nice golf clubs.
So?
There was just a big bag of a jumbled up golf clubs.
Love that.
And because we had three bays, they just gave us this jumbled up bag and went, there you go, lads, off you go.
Is this a retro club that you've gone for?
It was a retro club I was using, but that's not the point I'm trying to make here. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get the modern day thing.
Okay. It's not a 9-wood, is it? This show is over. Thanks, everyone.
It's now a one-man Tom Price. Band. Tom Price.
I can't actually look at him.
I hit this 9-wood.
Mate.
Is there any way I can have a bag full of woods?
I'll tell you what, if it was a wet paper bag, you wouldn't be able to get out of it if you're hitting a 9-wood. I can't believe it. A 9-wood.
I don't know what it is at the moment about me and woods, but there's a lovely relationship there. And I hit this 9-wood unbelievable.
Mm. Yeah.
About 175 yards. Yeah.
So like a 6-iron, basically.
Not for me. I struggle with my irons at the moment.
Yeah.
I can't hit my irons at the moment.
Why don't you get a 10-wood, 12-wood? Why don't you just get rid of all your irons?
That's what I mean.
You could become the little old lady, you know, who's 95.
The woods guy. The woods specialist.
Yeah, the woods specialist. Exactly. And you just have a hole and you put a little cover on all of them.
Yeah.
And you'd have like 10 woods.
Yeah.
A putter and maybe a wedge. Or maybe there'll be a wedge wood soon. I'd
love a wedge wood. How many woods could I realistically have in my bag?
Does it go higher than 9? Can you get a 10?
I don't know how high.
I feel like 9's the highest I've heard.
Probably. I just think, would it be mad to have a driver?
Yeah.
9-wood, 7-wood, 5-wood, 3-wood.
What about rescue? Where's the rescue?
I can't hit rescues. This is where the whole problem started.
Because a rescue is you have to hit like an iron.
You have to hit like an iron. For some reason, I can't do that at the moment.
It's because you need, for an iron, you're coming down on the ball, right? Whereas a wood, you're sweeping it away.
Maybe that's what it is. That's the classic difference in swing discipline between those two. And it must just be something like that. I must be struggling to compress at the moment. But it was a stripe show with the 9-wood.
Did you wake up the next morning with a hangover with a 9-wood next to you on the pillow? Like, oh, what have I done?
Oh, I've woken up with a...
What have I brought home with me? Oh, no, my friends.
I did get on eBay and start looking at them. Cobra do some great 9-woods.
Do they?
The old Cobra 9-woods.
Do they? Because you, to be fair, you love your 7-wood, and we are hearing a lot about the 7-wood.
Mm.
So what was the brand that you were using at the driving range?
Oh, it was like a really old... Right. I don't even know what the brand was. It was old as hell.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think for me, I've really been on a journey with woods. That woods were the part of my bag I just could not hit for ages and ages and ages.
Yeah.
And then I started with this 7-wood and loved it. And then I had to go with my mate's Sim 2 5-wood.
Yes.
Crushed that.
Oh, I love a 5-wood. I mean, don't get me wrong. I've got nothing against woods. I love a 5-wood.
Yeah.
And I probably would like a 7-wood.
I just really want this message to get out to our listeners that
there's nothing wrong with whatever words you use.
Not even that. Fine. More than that.
Don't be ashamed.
That you will, when you first start golf, you will get set up with a few things. Yeah. You'll get a putter, you'll get a driver, and you'll probably get a 3-wood.
Yeah.
And you'll struggle to hit it because it's really, really hard to hit. Yeah. And you will build this story in your mind that you can't hit the woods. You can't hit the wood. You can't hit a wood off a deck. You can't do it.
You can't hit the woods for the tees. Yeah. Lovely. Nearly. Doesn't matter. Move
and
on.
Then you'll hit a 5-wood
and
it will all make sense. Yeah. I just think we need to stop putting 3-woods in bags of people who have just started in this sport.
Automatically part of the thing.
Give them a 5-wood. Yeah. Give them a 7-wood.
Well, I would say don't give them a driver. I would say use a 3-wood because I hit my 3-wood beautifully. I'm still kind of hit my driver for toffee, but my 3-wood I can hit really, really nicely. I think start with a 3 and people can work up to a driver.
Can I have a hot take on that very quickly?
Yeah, go on.
I think a lot of high handicap golfers would benefit hugely just removing the driver from their bag. I think you would see handicaps of 28.
High handicap, low handicap as well, mate.
Yeah. But don't you think like when you look at your standard right-handed 28 handicapper, how many shots do they lose with that big banana mega fade?
Or the skittle along the ground.
Yeah.
You know, it's so true. If you pause that, but there's one problem with all this. You pause the driver and you take a 4-iron off the tee. Take a 5-iron off the tee that goes 170 or 180 yards. And then you'll have another 5-iron in maybe, or a bit more than that, right? Or a rescue wood in. But you're going to be on the fairway. Fine. But there's one key problem. It's a lot less fun.
It's not fun.
It's just so much less fun.
Yeah.
And that is forever going to be the thing. People are going to get the driver because it's a sexy, big beast that can hit the ball a mile. Unfortunately, you can't. I mean, I hit my driver perfectly once or maybe twice around. I hit a driver, I'm like, ooh. And that's not enough, right?
No.
So someone off 28, and it sets you up. It sets you up so badly for the hole.
I think you could shave off from a 28 handicapper. I think you could shave off 10 shots by putting a 5-wood in their hand that they can hit down the middle.
You've got a 28 handicapper in front of you who's about to go and play, right? It's his or her 10th round at your golf course. You've got 3 things to do, 3 things to tell them or do with their bag. What are the 3 things you're going to do? 28 handicapper, played a few times. They're scoring, you know, 100, 110 maybe.
I am going to definitely remove the driver.
Yeah.
I think that's an easy one. Mm-hmm. Remove the driver. I'm going to try and instill in them a bump and run.
Yeah.
Stop chipping.
Yeah.
Let's remove that.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say in the fairway, let's just play with a 7-iron.
Yeah. Just, yeah, that's nice.
My golf has often been described as bunting it up the fairway. I find that highly offensive. Just bunting it. No, oh, bunts it up straight down the middle. My friend Chris describes that all the time because he's a high handicapper,
yeah,
but he hits really sexy golf shots. He used to be a cricketer, so he really compresses the ball.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I beat him every time, but he says, you beat me through bunting it.
Yeah.
You just toe it up the fairway.
You're a massive bunt.
I'm just a huge bunt.
That is the problem, though. That is the problem. So I played on Saturday with this guy, Harry, is 21 years old and he hits the ball like a pro. He hits the ball like a professional. He's off about 9.
Yeah.
But the compression and the height is unreal. Just sprays it everywhere.
Sprays it
everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's fine with it. He's like, yeah, I need to play, you know, once a week. If he wanted to, he could get down to +2 or +3. Like, I've known his swing is just beautiful. And I love watching him hit the ball, but he sprays it everywhere because it's so long in the air. It crawls to the top of that plane. And then you watch it start the move downwards and you sort of make a triangle on your head and you're like, well, if it carries on like that and every time. And that's it, gone, done. And he's just, his scoring's a disaster because of it. He's a great golfer.
That logic there of hitting it really high in the air and then it starting to draw and fade. And when you multiply that by, well, it's that high.
Yeah.
And the time it's going to take it to get down, it's hugely off path.
I'm doing actual trigonometry as I watch it go. The isosceles is going towards the, you know, it's unreal when you watch it land. And you just think, God, that if I'd gone straight in that stuff, I'd think that was a really bad shot. He's gone in that exact same point, but after having gone... and looking beautiful and all those things. Still the same result. So the three things I would say to a 28 handicapper, I would take out half their golf clubs. I'd strip out half the clubs. You don't need that many clubs. I would say when you get to 10 pickup, just write NR down. Otherwise you're going to drive yourself mad.
Oh, so just enjoy it a bit more.
Just enjoy it a bit more. When you get to 10, don't worry about it. Move on to the next thing. And finally, what is the final thing I would do? I think similarly to you, I would try and get the most important shot at that level is chipping well. So when you're within 60, 70 yards, you've got a chance of getting on the green.
Yeah.
Stop attacking the flag as well. Just go for the middle of the green and get like a good 9-iron chip up and running or an 8-iron chip. Bump and run for you, but I'd like going high.
Yeah.
I think that would be helpful. I think they are covered in, there's too many clubs, too many choices. It's bamboozling and the drive, like you say, they spray it all over the place and then that's it, you're scuppered. You can't get out of that stuff.
I think I'd enjoy my golf as a high handicapper much more if I was just consistently hitting a 7-iron down the middle of the fairway. Because I played with high handicap golfers. A lot of my friends are high handicap golfers.
Yeah.
We got on golf days and after about 10 holes, their ambition is just to get the iron in the air.
Yeah.
Just to get the ball in the air.
Yeah.
Take a 7-iron, give yourself a chance of doing that. You're going to hit it 140, 150 down the middle.
Yeah.
You're probably going to have a much nicer day doing that.
I know, but it's not quite as much fun. No, that's what it comes back to, isn't it? That's what it always comes back to.
I have found a rule that's changed in golf.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't know this rule had changed. It's a bit of a rule special today.
It's a bit. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Bit rule heavy.
Excellent. I'm writing these all down. By the way, I'm terrible on the rules. Generally.
Yeah.
I just don't know the rules. I mean, I know the rules, but I don't know the rules.
Yeah.
You go out of bounds.
Where do you get relief from?
Yeah,
how many
shots
is
that? You can play again from that spot.
Go back, yeah.
And that's quite new, isn't it, that one, I think?
I don't know. But I know that's a... If you lose the ball, if you just lose a golf ball, then yeah, you've got to go back to where you were. If it's not like in a water hazard or something.
Or
if it's OB, for example, you'd have to go back.
I think so many golfers, a bit like a driving test. If you did a rules test on... The vast majority of golfers would fail. I actually really don't know so many rules. It's all just a bit like, oh yeah, I think it's that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Common sense. But then when it comes to the big important days like a medal, then you need to actually know them.
So I didn't realize that this rule had changed. This is really exciting. Go on. So, okay, you've rushed to the golf club. You've not had much time to practice and it's a medal day. You hit the first hole's par 3. You put it into the bunker on the left-hand side.
Okay.
You've not had time to practice your bunker shot.
Yep.
And obviously you can't practice a bunker shot because you can't touch the sand before your shot.
Right, right.
Right?
Yeah.
You know you can't practice in a bunker.
Of course you can't make contact with the sand, yeah.
Not the bunker the ball is in.
Oh.
And I didn't realise this. So, say you put your ball in a bunker.
That's clever.
You can go to another bunker and practice. Feel how deep the sand is. Just get a bit of a feel for it.
Do warn the people you're playing with that you know it's not the bunker your ball's in, because otherwise they will think you are deranged.
Where's he going?
Why is he over there?
But this
just
is
taking us a shot.
But talking about like rules changing and stuff in golf, that's another one of those rules that is just slowing the game down. We're trying to speed the game up so much. Why can I go and practice in that bunker when I can't just have a practice shot in this bunker?
Well, I also strongly believe, based on a few issues I've had at our course, where there is not enough sand often in the bunkers, because the sand blows away and courses need a lot of space to store all the sand. And that's a real issue for a lot of golf courses that don't have that storage space. So you do get certain bunkers where there's not enough sand and there's a rubber matting underneath the sand.
Yeah.
And I've had this on proper cards going in where I've hit the rubber and it's bounced off. You should be able to, right? If there's a bunker and you don't know how deep the sand is, get a tee. You should be able to put your tee into the sand just to make sure there's a good depth of sand so you can play a proper splash shot. Mm. It's so unfair. I cannot tell you how cross I was when I hit a perfectly good splash shot. But I didn't know
there's not enough sand there, so you just, yeah.
3 grains below that sand was rubber matting. Had I known that, I could have just hit a chip shot. Fine. But you have the right to be able to get a tee, plug it in around the ball and go, yeah, there's sand here, or no, there's not. That would make a massive difference, and that's not something that I think gives you an unwarranted advantage.
And that's a rule that's there for the professionals because they play courses there the bunkers are full.
Let's be honest. Pros in bunkers. They've got it now. They're really good at bunkers. Bunkers are not
hazard.
It's not hazard. Unless it's the death trap in a St. Andrews or whatever, you know, and something ridiculous and they've got to hit it over a house and stop it on a... Any bunker on professional golf now, they get in the bunker and you go, yeah, they'll get up and down out of there. Hmm. It's so rare that they don't get up and down.
A lot of PGA players on a par 5 will aim for the bunker.
Use it.
They can just use it. They can just slam their ball into it.
Like and netting.
It's netting, yeah. That happens all the time. They'll take a 3-wood at a par 5 and go, well, do you know what? I'm just going to put it in that bunker there because it's going to stop dead.
And up I know and down
I can,
birdie.
I know I can get up and down. So
okay, so how do we make bunkers harder? How do we stop them from doing that? I've got the answer.
Go on.
Take the sand out. Just take all the sand out. Just for pros.
What? Just mud?
Just leave mud. Yeah.
Get out of there.
Imagine the Masters next year.
Oh, God.
Beautiful, iconic holes and then just these mud holes.
Put it in the mud hole. Try and get out of that, Phil.
What is that? We call this one the dog toilet. Good luck, Tiger.
Oh.
Well, you know, it's true, though. Bunkers have got...
They're not a hazard.
They're not a hazard.
I find bunkers so difficult at the moment.
They should be called the sand pit now.
Huh, because they're fun.
Instead of a bunker, they should be called a sand pit.
I know what you've done there. I really struggle with bunkers at the moment. I struggle with bunkers at the moment because the key thing for a bunker shot is belief in what you're doing and belief in what you're doing leading to swing speed because you need to have swing speed to get it up in the air to splash it. Like you got to go at the thing really fast. And my confidence is gone at the moment.
Yes.
So I decelerate and I play them awfully.
I am a bunker bunter. I don't do the full... Because remember when we played with Simon Dyson, he was telling us about Luke Donald is like the go-to coach for a lot of people for bunkers. He's a bunker genius. And he's got the windscreen wipers thing. Windscreen wipers, big, like you stay on that spot and you just go for it, right?
Yeah.
And I was so shocked. And watching him and the few pros we've played with, watching these tiny bunker, these tiny shots they've got, and they do a full swing out of a bunker. And I'm like, no, I bunt it. I go,
yeah.
And I just sort of fart it out and it rolls near enough. And sometimes I can get up and down very rarely. I'm very rarely up and down from a bunker.
And
they fully commit to it. It's commitment. And this comes back to what we were talking about at the beginning with my chipping when I played in the medal on Saturday. Commitment.
Yeah. Why don't you full swing in a bunker? I know why I don't full swing in a bunker.
Because I'm going to thin it into the side of the bunker.
There you go.
And then I'll cry.
Yep.
And then who's happy? You, probably, because I'm crying. You're filming it and putting it on TikTok.
But I'm not even thinking I'm thinning it into the side of the bunker. I'm thinking I'm thinning it three centimetres over the lip of the bunker and hitting it 70 yards that way.
You know you're in trouble when you're playing a bunker shot and there's someone watching you on the green and they are directly behind the flag. And you have to say, John, you're going to have to watch out, mate, because this might become a bullet with your name on it.
Not safe.
Yeah, it's true. When you have to do that and you're like, sorry, mate, I don't know what's going to happen here. And as soon as you've said that, you're in bunker trouble. You need to go to those bunker shots and think, it's like water. I'm going to hit full on and it's going to splash and the sand's going to take all the venom out of it and the ball's going to pop up.
Talking about being in danger while playing golf. Where was I playing? What course was it? Gerrard's Cross.
Yeah.
Playing Gerrard's Cross. I was in a 4-ball. There was only one of the other guys that I knew.
Okay.
So I had no idea the other golfer's ability.
Yeah.
And we were walking down the fairway. And you know what it's like when you're in a 4-ball with a couple of decent golfers, you're not all waiting behind that person. You're all just moving up to the fairway to your own ball because they know what they're doing.
Of course. It's a bit ready golfy.
Yes.
It's not full ready golf, but it's very much, I'm in position. I know you're just there, but it's fine.
So he was in the fairway, I was in the fairway. I was probably 4 foot in front of him, maybe more, maybe like 4 meters in front of him. And he was a right-handed golfer and I was to his right. Yeah. So
you just
pretty hard to hit me there. I've never been as nearly hit as I was in that moment. And being 4 meters away from that shot, I got the...
Oh, yeah. Whoosh. I've had that.
Not even time to react.
No. You have no chance. And you think when you're watching someone who's 4 meters behind you, you think, well, if it does come on, flinch. No, you wouldn't. You have no time at all.
It's terrifying.
Yeah, it is. And they can't go, oh, there's nothing.
Nope.
I've had it skim across just here and I felt the air whistle across my face. And if that had made contact, broken nose at the very least. At the very least.
Terrifying. Playing with golfers that you've never played with before, yeah, just stay out of their way. Because it was just with me at the moment, getting married in 6 weeks, it just would have been a disaster.
Mate, if you have a big black eye on your wedding.
It would have been an absolute disaster.
We're at time.
Can I do one more thing before we're done?
Yeah, of course.
I've got one more thing, and I don't know whether it's helpful or not, depending on how they are approaching this.
Okay.
American Golf currently
are
offering 30-minute free sessions in their indoor simulators.
Okay.
For you to just go and use the technology if you want at the moment. That's just an interesting point if you fancy it.
That is an interesting idea. And presumably they can then do that thing much like a fitness instructor at a gym. They can sort of walk over to you and say, do you fancy this 10-wood? And you can go, no, I'm not having a 10-wood. Yeah, give it to me. Let me have the 10-wood.
Yeah.
Maybe you should get a 10-wood and just carve out 10 and just put 5.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Right, big lad 5-wood or something on the side of it.
Sure.
And people will never know.
They'll never know that I've got a 10-wood. But can I just, on the American Golf thing.
It's a good idea.
It is a great idea, but I had a really bad experience once with American Golf.
Go on.
Where it was, I don't know whether I should have done this. I mean, it was legally fine, but morally, when I look back on it, probably wasn't the best moral thing to do. It was the day before the UK went into lockdown.
Okay.
And I went for an iron fitting.
Okay.
The law said I could.
Okay.
I think maybe on reflection, I probably wasn't the best thing to do. But, you know, hindsight, we didn't know. We didn't know at that
you
stage.
You're in a small space with another person.
Yeah.
And also, I've seen you swing the golf club. You're doing a lot of breathing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Tom Green panting.
There's a lot of panting.
Yeah, we didn't know.
We didn't know, guys. We didn't know. But anyway, I did an iron fitting with American Golf. And famously, their fittings are free.
Of course.
So I went down and got a free fitting.
Yeah.
And I had a very uncomfortable, hard sale after the fitting where he really tried to sell me the golf clubs. And it was all a bit horrible and awkward and not nice. And I was like, mate, I'm not going to drop £1,200 just on a Tuesday afternoon on some TaylorMade P790s just because I've done a fitting. And it was just a bit uncomfortable. And I think it's really interesting. Going from that point, if I was to do a fitting, I'd always pay.
Because
you can just pay for them for like 30 quid or whatever, and there's no hard sale afterwards. You just get the data and go away.
Also, the thing to do, certainly with woods, I think less so with irons, but get some secondhand woods or irons and then pay for a fitting afterwards. Do you know what I mean? So if there's a club you want to buy and you don't quite know what your exact measurements are, say it's a driver, but you like the club and it's a good deal, get it and then go and pay for a fitting and they can change things around it and they can change your shaft if you want to or whatever.
Yeah.
Like that makes a lot more sense. I think that...
It's harder with irons that.
It is harder with irons. But you can still have a lot of variables with irons. But I think that generally speaking, they get to a stage where they're like, right, here we go. The big 1200 quid set of irons. Brilliant. Absolutely like fantastic. It's a lot though. And you know what I say, spend 400 on them, get some really good ones that are maybe secondhand and then get lessons. That's going to make so much more difference.
But the thing to do is to go to a fitting, get all your numbers, and then buy them online.
Yeah.
Your 30 quid.
Yes.
So you've got your 30 quid spent. You can go and spend £400 on irons.
Yeah.
Your whole outlay is 430.
Yeah.
Or get a free fitting and have to spend 1200 quid on irons.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pay your 30 quid.
Yeah, it makes sense.
I just had a really horrible experience where he was really pressured.
And the hard sell sort of, and then you left the whole thing feeling eggy and...
Oh, he just turned into a real bitch afterwards. Like when he became quite clear I wasn't going to do it, he just became like a real like, all right, fine then.
Oh.
I was just like, oh, this is not nice.
Oh, wow.
And then we went into lockdown and I was like, well, if I'd bought them, I wouldn't even be able to bloody use them now for months anyway.
Well, yeah, golf got switched off for months anyway, didn't
it? Yeah. So anyway, I just thought it's interesting. If you want a half an hour free session on one of those indoor ranges.
Yeah.
American Golf.
Yeah, it's good thing to see. All right, fine. Well, we've covered a lot today, Tom.
It's been a lot. A lot's gone down.
It's an intense, dense episode. Any issues that we've picked up, and if you've been affected by any of the issues we've talked about today, drop us an email, thetoms@golfersruiningmylife.co.uk. We're starting to say it every time, but we are lining it up. I've got a mad week this week, but next week we're going to do it. An email special.
You just need emails. Just get your emails in.
We've had loads of emails, so we will do an email special very soon. Some of them are absolutely brilliant. So, yeah, by all means, add your email to the pile.
thetoms@golfersruiningmylife.co.uk. The good thing is, we're probably going to do it maybe at the end of this week, start of next week.
Yeah.
If you email now, you'll be at the top of the pile. So we almost guarantee yours will get spoken about.
Yeah, that's good.
So you need to get emailing right now and hit that subscribe button. Go and check us out on TikTok. You can watch us as well on YouTube if you want to just stick it on the TV while you're making dinner or whatever. You don't actually want to watch the show. We're on YouTube. Golf is ruining my life.
Do it. That's all you got to do. All right. In the meantime, have a great week and make sure golf ruins your life completely. And we'll see you next time.
Thanks.
Bye.
Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.